Okay, you've joined us again. This is episode 12 of the first season of The Wire, written by George Pelicanos. I'm David Simon, exec producer.
How is she?
George is here with me in the studio.
In and out of the morphine drip.
I'm George.
Going in. Freeze your ass off that wall, then. Either pay your respects or...
We come in the wake of Kima Greggs having been shot.
Oh, fuck this case.
Fuck it, huh? Now you're just gonna what? Call off your little crusade?
Undercover screw-up.
Is that what you think
and
it was?
And she's been severely wounded.
Avon Barksdale was just a way for me to show everyone how smart I was and how fucked up the department is, that's all.
Just put Jimmy McNulty up on your shoulders.
March him around the room. Break out the keg. It was never about Avon Barksdale, Lieutenant.
This is a moment of deconstructing the mythic police pursuit of the bad guy.
You think we all didn't know?
You have so many police procedurals and television shows exalt the pursuit as being sort of a moral crusade. And
right, it's between him and me now.
Right, kind of thing.
Right. Meant something. And you know what? Burrell and Rawls and them, they were right.
The whole purpose of the scene here is basically to have exactly McNulty shit. Admit that this was about McNulty and McNulty.
To me when you came in beating the drum. But now we got that woman in there, that good police, breathing through a fucking tube because it meant something to her. And the shooters who dropped Kima, they're still in the wind. And whoever sent those motherfuckers into that alley...
This was George's first episode writing for the show.
So you can stand there,
and one of the reasons I picked it very specifically was, if you've read any of George's fiction... any of his novels, a good many of them result in a culminating moment, often violent moment, in which all the themes of the book come together towards the end. And we're heading towards a moment of agonizing violence here, and I thought, who better to do agonizing violence? This is something that George has done time and time again in his own work. And I actually trusted him more to construct that, going to the mountaintop there and exacting all of the emotion out of it in a way that was credible than I trusted myself. So I thought, this is where we could take the show to another level.
Yeah, and I lucked out because I got a good episode out of it.
That's the face of our first AD, Anthony Hemingway. That was him smoking the cigarette. I should give credit where credit is due.
You gotta keep the devil way down in the hole.
And that's Charlie Musselwhite on the harp.
Very nice. It's the best part right there.
Yeah, there you go. This episode was directed by Clement Virgo, a Canadian director who Clark Johnson actually turned us on to.
Mm-hmm.
He also did episode 4 in this.
You think nigger fish food?
Had become iconic.
And
it had sort of represented the center of the universe for these characters.
Yo, heads up.
Strength.
I need your pages. All y'all, the whole crew.
I think every scene, J.D. Williams as Bodie always found himself sitting on the back of that orange couch.
Sterling, Cass, and Manny.
I'm gonna go get them shits.
How am I talk to my girl?
Talk to your hand, nigga. That's the only girl you got.
No more.
The couch would be the image in the one sheet. Everybody knows The Wire.
Right. It's now in the Museum of Television and Film History, I believe.
Nobody gonna use these.
No, I'm just lying. I'm making that up. It's in the prop department, gathering dust.
You understand me? We got the numbers. We the only niggas that need them numbers. Not your moms, not your girl, nobody.
Actually, when D'Angelo later finished his run in second season, there was a little ceremony on set, and the art department had written R.I.P. D'Angelo on the back of that sofa. Had a cake. And we offered to send the couch as a souvenir to him in New York.
He didn't want it?
No. He probably couldn't decorate around it.
Give me on the third number. Learn them shits and throw that shit away.
Y'all doing this in the towers, too?
Doing it every goddamn place. Pages, payphones is dead. Right?
Yeah.
The detail involved in the communications and the efforts to penetrate it by the police are a lot of what powered these later episodes.
That niggas ain't hurt. Narcos took the main stash. Why the fuck you think we changing up?
Back the fuck up, youngin. These shits ain't for you.
All right. Here we're starting to see the relationship between Lester Freeman and Chardine developing.
All right. The gift of corrected vision. Compliments of the BPD.
Get the heck, you all are focused.
Well, what man wouldn't be?
He can flirt. If you've been watching the show for the full run, to see these wiretaps dead after seeing all the activity on them from all the previous episodes, that's the beauty of being able to tell a story in detail over a length of time.
Last night they burned us all away.
You look at 13 hours of television. It's longer than all three Godfather segments. Not a message. Whatever intricacies of character and of plot you want to explore, there's room for it.
For what?
State campaign finance reports. I checked all the stuff here.
Again, the intricacy of the investigation. You don't get a chance to see this in any episodic television that is an hour long. Because you have to solve that crime by the end of the hour.
Well, then we need to change up.
And what we're doing on this show is almost wringing every piece of juice you can out of the nature of a prolonged investigation.
She works at Orlando's, and she's been helping us out there from time to time.
Wires go up, wires come down.
She can see well enough to match. Faces the voices.
Documents are found. Opportunities are lost.
Time comes, though, I know you're going to step up. We're going to need Perlman to approve her wearing a wire.
Can I get a cup of coffee?
What are you taking?
I'll get it. A little cream, right?
And George, were you channeling your inner dog here?
Those Narcos motherfuckers clean my shit out.
The Morris Levy character, one of the more obviously Jewish characters, happens to be the ruthlessly drug-involved lawyer. I expect that my B'nai B'rith membership will be revoked whenever they figure out that I have some responsibility for this. But if you've been watching the show carefully, I think you realize that, much like an American city, every ethnic group is reviled and debased by every other ethnic group. It basically is not the happy melting pot of American myth, but the uncomfortable and corrupted melting pot of, I think, the reality. We weren't pulling punches on anybody. And later in this episode, I think there's a moment where one of the characters actually refers to Levy as that Jew lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Well, all that fancy talk aside, I just want to go on record saying I didn't write that line. After maybe you did, Mr. Simon.
Yeah. Pussy.
Hit the newspapers, but around that time, the cops was on our shit.
The security guard. The one whose testimony sprung D'Angelo.
Lakeisha Lyles,
yeah. I don't think I've ever encountered a Baltimore defense attorney quite so intimately involved. Mm-hmm. And yet, he's rooted in two or three characters that were very much organizational drug lawyers and who, if they weren't as overt as Morris Levy is shown here, they were nonetheless complicit in suborning perjury, in structuring fees, and doing the sorts of things that made them essential to drug organizations and made them a lot of money. So Morris is based on a couple of real guys, played wonderfully by Michael Kostroff.
And then we got, that shit with Orlando, the only problem there was Little Man.
Was. Who else?
It's over. Your wire's cold.
Court orders give me a total of 90 days on file.
Lance Reddick is just so strong in this whole episode.
To a bunch of broke-ass payphones, have at it.
It's cool to see him, scene by scene, just get harder and harder coming up against these guys, you know?
Right. I think in some ways this was the redemption episode.
I give you those people, I decide who comes back.
He had paid into the account with all those scenes where he was so tight and so rigid and held himself within check, so that when he finally begins to play the game on his own terms, it really resonated.
What's the name of that old detective from Pawn Shop?
And this is a guy who doesn't do a lot. His expressions are not broad or anything like that. He's acting with his eyes.
Right.
Freeman. Prisbaluski.
keep him.
Right there.
Send back
right
Signor and Santangelo.
Knowing he got the better of that draw and not revealing it. It's just beautiful.
If you want to do anything beyond listen to those dead phones, you need to brief me first. Hmm? You did good, Cedric. You play your cards right. All the work you did over the past few months will speak volumes for you.
And Major Spurgeon is saying that he's retiring at the end of November.
Which opens up the Northwest Command.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Who is sitting in front of the boss's office and being informed that her investigation has run amok without her.
Some contributors.
And without her knowledge.
Questions.
Right, she's totally blindsided
doing
here.
Background checks.
I don't know anything about this.
I mean, Ronnie, where the fuck is all this going?
Those are public reports, right? I mean, no one on that detail has come to me for any kind of subpoena.
You got backdoored too, huh? Well, just so there's no misunderstanding.
You like the dog, don't you? You like that little...
I do. That's a Vince Prania touch, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice.
Is that a
I want one of those on my desk.
Is that a Labrador?
I got to see it again. It might be a setter.
Also, copies of the.
Vince is our production designer. From the donor representative. Actually, this was filmed in an empty office over on Baltimore Street in one of the high rises. It had been a law office, but all those books are set dressing. All those legal books. All the furniture. You know, everything.
Guys,
in a matter of days.
Listen to me.
Vince is an artist. Didn't he have a show in Baltimore, a retrospective of his work?
He did indeed. And that includes everything from large budget films like Barry Levinson and Liberty Heights to all the John Waters work. If you're a student of John Waters, you know that Vince has been with him since large crustaceans were attacking and sexually ravishing Divine, you know. It was Vince that was building that crustacean costume.
And this isn't really a show where you want to draw attention to yourself in terms of the art direction and so on. So
right.
It's even more of a challenge in a way for somebody that creative to...
Right. It actually shows the breadth of what he can do. And here he's using restraint.
You know, the one that was at the Greeks tonight. We paid him for the lookout.
What would y'all need him for?
Most is to you.
You ain't gotta worry about
three very good actors making every gesture count and not using more than they need.
Yo, the man asked you a simple question.
Look, I don't mean y'all no disrespect. You know I don't. But I'm sitting here telling you that the boy is out the game. And even if he wasn't out the game, he wouldn't be no problem.
Well, you know we just want to talk to him, D.
Even though it was scripted, I don't think we realized how much moral currency would be invested with the life of Wallace, which is what they're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
Testament to how real Michael Jordan made that character. And to the way in which all of these actors have reacted to their own needs and ambitions and motives.
Well, even the crew, if you remember, when this thing happens later in the episode, we're kind of shook up about it.
I'm still sort of upset that we killed Wallace. I blame you, George. It's your episode. Nicely done, very subtle. Maybe you saw the mic, maybe you didn't, but here's the reveal.
Honey, just leave the damn thing alone.
Where you get these, man? Previous.
Tell the story, George.
That's just one of my patented talk about the food scenes. In this one, Priebus is mentioned, which is, I love their chili dogs, it's down on Broadway. But also George's lunch on Light Street, which was a brother-in-law of mine's. It was his family's restaurant. And there's a lot of inane chatter in this thing you hear in the background about, you know, your mother and your mother's nipples and all this stuff going back and forth. And, you know, you can just see on free, he's had it.
You said the best
Will you Ivy Leaguers keep it down? I can't hear a goddamn thing.
If two people were discussing food in Baltimore with great intimacy and verve in any of the scenes of The Wire, chances are George has been provoked to write it.
It's very important in life. The next meal.
Fixing to be. That's why I'm here, you know?
Well, when you're done discussing, you come back.
All right, then. Hold that pose right there, shorty. Hook you up with some money cut.
Yeah, these guys are just talking too much.
Oh, y'all niggas talk too damn much, man.
Yes.
It's as if you knew what he was going to say.
Who the fuck is she? Housing police?
No. She's one of them civilians they got doing security. Housing cops with the gray uniforms.
So she's
this
not
is the kind of
nothing.
Thing we sort of demanded of our viewers first season, and I had no right to expect that they would follow because TV doesn't work that way, but that is the witness who changed her story in the initial episode in D'Angelo's murder trial. And here she's been killed 11 episodes later. And we felt that we had just given you enough information to know that Avon Barksdale was cleaning up and that's a plot point that matters and to remember who she was.
Table scraps.
Television doesn't really have that ambition.
For Chardine to be in there long enough for us to get it.
Again, it goes back to the idea that this is a novel, in a way, for television. You can't go to a book and start reading in the middle and get the full effect or understand what's going on, and it's the same thing with this show. You have to be an active participant in your show.
That's right.
Damn, Wallace!
That's why you should be buying this DVD set.
The whole set.
Yeah, the whole set. And watching it in order. Dutifully. Every night.
Did you get some of that country ass?
Said if he did, it was on four legs.
There was no farms down there, man. They had some bams, though.
That's a DC phrase. Bam.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It was like, you know.
This, right? That's where you got them diehards right there.
These Timbs.
Shit, yeah, they Timbs, man. I can see the tree on the side now.
D'Angelo would know.
So you
back on the money? He's sartorial.
Look, if we do put you back on, you have to start at look.
No, it's just poetry.
Come on, nigga, let's walk.
Dog, you ain't cornhorn no animal for real, did you?
Come on,
stupid. Now don't be fucking with my Sean John.
Tell about the cut.
Garvey.
What cut?
What cut? Oh, God, you're a hero. He doesn't want to run it. That scene actually continued with a hilarious exchange about Trey Cheney's character, Poot, having bought a faux.
Oh, yeah, he bought it hot off the street. It was a scene John.
Scene John. It had a logo that wasn't quite right, and he hadn't even noticed and had to have it pointed out to him. It was a wonderful moment of...
Just incompetence, you know. Yeah. Just, he thought he had a deal.
Yeah. He was sort of tortured in the way that you get tortured.
Right, your friends always pick up on that sort of thing.
And it was beautiful, and it was one of those last cuts to get it down to 56 minutes and 30 seconds. It died, and I had to face George later knowing I had cut something that was
very
funny.
I'll get back in there again. By the way, that comes from, in my youth, I had a hot watch my grandfather bought me. It was a Hamilton, and I was bragging about it to my friends, and they all started laughing, and they pointed out that it was a Hormilton. I never forgot that.
What about your stripper?
Woman's got heart.
I mean, I want to protect it. No more bodies here.
Well, I got room in my place. You can live with me. I got no problem with that.
Remember who you are, Detective.
Protect and serve, Lieutenant. Protect and serve.
I'm saying, this here game, it ain't gonna work for you no more, man. You leaving, you stirred up some shit.
While I was having come back from being a witness. Though nobody knows that for certain, they know he disappeared.
I've been with them niggas since.
His awareness of an earlier murder makes him vulnerable.
I guess it's
while Stringer and Avon are cleaning up.
Right?
You ain't hearing me, Wallace. You ain't hearing me. Anybody ask you whether you're in this game, you tell them you're in it for life. All right? You play it hard, you play it tight, and you make sure niggas know you're gonna stand by your people. No loose talk, no second thoughts, and no snitching. Play it like that.
What a face.
Yep.
Hey! What you doing down in the PJs, you lost?
Just looking for you.
You know I'd be down here working.
You know, a working man gotta eat.
My favorite spice.
I think another food one's coming, George.
Yeah. Sterling's. Let me get up out of here and get great fish cakes. But the reveal here is that this is his mother.
You too.
And they got a little bit of a similar look, too. We got lucky that way.
Mm-hmm. Sterling's, baby. We out the feast. What the hell is Sterling's? Sterling's, you know, up on 29th Street. Don't you know nothing? Shit, if it ain't up in the West Side, I don't know shit, yo. Because this shit, this is me, yo. Right here. Who's that? Your new girl or something? Nah, nigga, that's my mom.
It's a good scene because it, again, talks about how he's trapped there through no fault of his own.
And you know, Senator Davis? Prefer to think that he's comfortable.
No, sir.
Lieutenant?
Clay, the sense of foreboding you. Over Wallace here is obvious. I mean, if you're a smart viewer, you're watching it, and you know something bad's going to happen.
Help?
Your people are. The trick is not to hide it. The trick is to work with it, and basically, checking up you want to stop watching, but you can't.
I wanted to reassure you on that.
That's kind of right on the edge that we wanted the episode to feel. Drugs, Lieutenant.
Yeah, there's a sense of dread.
Good. And this business with the senator's driver.
Mr. Price. Damien.
Diddy.
This business with Mr. Price.
Isaiah Whitlock, who's playing Senator Clay Davis here. One of the things I think we pride ourselves on is when we have parts that are not particularly big, but we know that they have potential for the future and that we may be using these characters in very essential ways further on. We cast with that in mind.
Well, crime here.
This is a very accomplished actor who probably only had one or two key scenes in his first season and maybe one or two key scenes in second season, but if you keep watching, I think ultimately he's going to be more meaningful. And we knew that. We knew going in that he was going to have a lot more work.
Mr. Price, I think we are in agreement on that. No, there was PC for the search.
You're saying you have evidence that a senatorial aide is involved in drugs?
Watch how he pivots here.
We had reason to stop Mr. Price and effect a body search.
He's playing a tie-wearing politician for the first part of the scene, but when he decides to pivot and go street on Daniels, it's beautiful.
Irv, will you explain to this motherfucker just what the fuck it is he's doing here?
Lieutenant Daniels.
There it is.
But it's pretty basic. If the senator's not involved in anything illegal, then he doesn't need to worry. I can't be any clearer about it than that.
Fool, what do you think? Do we know anything about who gives money? Do we give a damn about who they are or what they
want? This is written off of a conversation that I actually know happened in the 80s.
We don't care.
Where a politically connected person came in to argue directly to the police commissioner that he was unfairly being targeted.
Anything else?
And the lines of dialogue were actually what the commissioner at the time, Bishop Robinson, threw back at the guy.
Gentlemen.
We put that into Daniel's mouth.
Motherfucker, you need to put his ass on a foot post so far out in the sticks that he's going to see the Philadelphia cops walking towards him.
Stole that from H.L. Mencken's memoirs, where he describes his first newspaper job as he was in a bureau so far out he saw the Philadelphia reporters walking towards him. Got to credit Mencken when you steal from him.
Definitely. It's the hook, ape walk or something.
A-team with a bullet, baby! Yeah!
Is that what you imagined, George?
I didn't know he'd do it so well.
Yeah.
And the best part, the cop is 37. You know, it helps if you know him by the numbers. It makes you sound more professional. Fucking car, but he gets back from in-service training. He's gonna kiss the stripes. I'm gonna make him kiss the stripes.
We've never explained Herc's New York accent. Dominic Lapidosi.
You know, we up in the Towers Nation?
Shot dead, yo.
Again, we're playing these for projects. These are two senior citizens' homes in West Baltimore. They are the closest we can get to what the projects were in Baltimore in the early 90s, late 80s, the ones that were ultimately dynamited.
What up, man?
Like a lot of cities around the country, housing officials realized high-rise projects were unpoliceable and untenable, and just like the Robert Taylor homes in Chicago or a lot of the high-rises in New York or elsewhere, they're coming down.
I heard he was out the game.
What? He'll be back now.
Where he been at?
Down his granny house.
Now, it's kind of important to note here that the character of Bodie is the victim, too.
I heard he damn near.
He's being asked to put work in here, and you can't say no.
Right.
He just ain't built for
in any job, when you turn down a promotion, you've got one foot out the door.
Right.
What about you?
Again, the institutional aspect of both sides of this.
Right.
You know, you're watching Daniels negotiate his institution, and once again, right here, mid-level management is a bitch.
You got heat? All right, soldier.
It's a little uneasy there.
Yeah.
It was nice.
And the hunt for Wallace. These are all small details that, once again, if you were watching closely in earlier episodes, that little refrigerator was filled with juice boxes for the kids that went to school. The mattresses where they were sleeping in this vacant house are all up against the wall.
What's clear upstairs?
And McNulty looks up and sees that the pirated wire where they got electricity from is not there anymore.
No juice boxes. No Wallace.
That's all it said.
Hey,
I mean, we're not explaining things more than
that. Bob's never be putting no napkins in the bag.
Motherfuckers, napkins expensive and shit.
So is my money.
Yeah, come on, go, Sneak. Y'all know what's here. Go, I need to get up in this Chinese food, because you know.
I got my son's nickname in this scene. They call my oldest son Buff. And one of the kids who really does a nice little job here.
Big Time is a new video on 106 and Park.
106 and Park?
Vicious.
It's vicious?
Yeah.
For real. What they call you, little man?
Buff, because I got the stuff.
You got the stuff?
It's such a sweet, real scene.
Yeah.
Any word on the kid?
I rolled around Cambridge all night with his beer bottle. If he's down there, he ain't got no profile.
We got lookouts to every car in the Western Central. We're trying for an address on his mother.
Detective?
Lieutenant.
Wire's dead, so we've been ordered to begin sending bodies home. Sydney, we have a little longer because Cantrell still owes me.
You okay with Rawls?
I gave him his clearance, right? What's he gonna do to me?
Keep it warm, Sandy.
Not a lot of heroic exits on this show. We don't really write those kinds.
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
Plans for what is now Orlando's, the upper floors. This is the property next door.
You should get those so quick.
Co-star search. The plan is to get a remote mic into the office. Maybe even some fiber optics. Only we don't know where Avon's office is yet. Which is where Chardine helps us out in a big way.
What's she gonna do? Take out a tape measure and ask Avon to hold the other end?
Ain't none of y'all ever been in the military? How do you learn a 30-inch quick tie?
Don't look at me.
Don't look at me either. This is an Ed Burns moment.
I had to ask. This is something I did have to research.
Give me a roll and some string.
Why me?
Dominic and Seth Gilliam as Herc and Carver.
Mm-hmm.
They have such beautiful comic timing.
Wallace ain't no snitch. Man, how you know?
And as I think is the case with all actors, whatever they're doing, they want more of the other. So they pull off these wonderful comic moments, and then they want to be more serious. If we had them being more serious, they'd want to play the comic moments. But I don't think they've missed the chance to push a joke a little bit further and still make it credible.
It's the game, yo. It's the fucking game.
They've nailed every moment.
Oh, yeah. And the writers fight over their scenes.
Right.
It makes you look good.
Cedric, you ever hear of an elected official in Baltimore giving money back? Whatever you're doing, you scared my boss shitless. Calls me in and hands me that. Forgive me for prying into the details of our investigation. I know it's annoying, but what the hell are you guys doing?
Nice light touch she had there.
Is that Avon's money?
East side addresses. Maybe Barksdale has fronts we don't know about. State's attorney's returning this?
If you watched this season, you saw the Lester Freeman character develop from somebody who was on the shelf to an essential part of the investigation. It's one of the most enjoyable transformations in the piece.
Yeah, and he's a fantastic actor.
She didn't pour it into.
Did you, man? Saying talking about your mom like you still a kid.
Well, I got the thinking on it. Your ass ain't got to be hard all the goddamn time either.
Soft link, break the chain.
One of the previous brothers who worked at this counter ultimately became a circuit judge in Baltimore City, John Previs. Another rags to riches story of child of Greek immigrants. Hey, George? Hey, Mr. Pelicano?
Hey, I'm not going to say a word. Those chili dogs put that kid through law school.
Yes, they did.
This floor, it's the second room from the rear. The stairs start 30 paces from the front. There's 24 stairs, about a foot each. When you get to the top floor, it's 8 paces to the door to dressing room, and then another 10 to the back room.
80 to 110 in from the front.
Presbuliski.
Otherwise, we need a warrant.
15.
Here, take 10.
15.
Motherfucker, I don't see no meter. Get the fuck out of here.
It's 3:30 in the morning.
Easy now. Hold on, the needs to be as big as your finger.
Not those SK sausage-looking fingers you got.
You know what big hands mean. You know what big hands mean, right?
The asking it the second time is what made it brilliant, George. And that was scripted. Just one time would have been a mere dick joke, but, you know, two makes it art.
Where y'all at?
That's what I'm here for.
All right, when I find y'all, you're going to get it. Better come out now.
That's a beautiful push-in.
Where y'all at?
This is so beautifully done.
Yo, I'm not even playing with y'all right about now. You hear me?
And you actually scripted. You wanted that look up the stairs.
Yes.
The ascension. It'll resonate in a little bit later in the episode. We can talk about that later.
Fuck y'all at. All right, when I find y'all, I'm beating y'all asses. Now where y'all at? All right, don't let me find y'all.
This is, without a doubt, the hardest scene I've ever had to write.
Yo, check this poop. Little man left his play and shit.
Hey, man, you's a weak-ass nigga, man. You should have stayed down in the country, man.
Yo, you my, I'm a nigga, yo.
You fucking brought this on yourself, man.
We boys.
You brought this on yourself.
Man, you gotta be like this, yo. We niggas, man, BC, remember that?
Come on. You wetting your fucking pants like you a little boy. Be a man. Stand up like a motherfucking man.
I'm a nigga, yo.
Man, you said you was a fucking man. Stand up straight.
That's us, man.
Do it, goddammit, if you're gonna.
I don't think we've ever filmed anything more disturbing than that scene.
Darcia Wallace? We're looking for your son. Thought you might help us out as to his whereabouts.
And then you meet Wallace's mother. It's right. Shit. Up against it, and you sort of see how he got
to where he was.
What took me for $10?
Recently?
What's going on out there?
Nothing. A couple of police interrupted me while I'm trying to get my drink on.
Like your son might be in some danger.
He gonna be in some danger right here. He shows up. snatch that 10 out of my purse without asking, I'll slap the bright out of his eyes.
That line, slap the bright out of his eyes. Where did you get that?
You run into him.
The obvious line would be, I'll slap the taste out of his mouth, you know. Yeah. But it speaks more to just taking away his spirit completely, taking away his innocence. I'll slap the bright out of his eyes.
Pulled that one out of your own head?
I did.
Damn.
You get lucky once in a while.
Yeah. Jim Trufrost as Roland Przybylowski had another great transformation from being very disturbed and somebody who clearly had lost his way within the police department, had no grounding in anything, to being utilized in a meaningful way by Lester Freeman, mentored, basically, in a way that the institution had failed to do. Where things go right in our stories, it tends to be interpersonal. Mm-hmm. People extending themselves in interpersonal relationships, not the institution utilizing people in a healthy way.
Just dial 911 and talk to whoever pick up. Don't say your name or nothing. Just say that there's been an animal hurt inside the house right there, and then you hang up.
When they were given a little bit of freedom to be creative, they found their niche in this.
Right. Exactly.
Listen, right now, man, I feel like I don't have that many people around me I could really trust.
Not like one of the things I loved about Wood Harris's performance, the Kingpin.
They're not flashing.
Right.
We got something real.
And they're smart enough not to flash.
Right. Flash brings police. You do the absolute minimum of that. I like exactly where Wood placed the character. I thought he did beautifully with that. Now, most police shows, he'd have been saying shit for the tragic loss of a 16-year-old, 15-year-old's life. In my head, in that scene, he's saying shit for the case. There may be some sense of the tragedy, but he does this every day. The body is the work, you know?
Right, they don't take it personally at that point.
Right.
And they can't.
Yeah, you can't. You put a gun in your own mouth. You know, there's a sequence here in a couple of scenes where you see the information about Wallace's death land on Daniels and on McNulty. And Daniels, who had experienced Wallace, responds with some sense of the human loss, the human cost of the investigation in terms of Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
Right here, you see it.
Yeah. What?
Wallace?
Compare that, you know, as we go forward, there'll be another bite of that with McNulty taking it in. See the difference.
And that is the Baltimore Sun that is going in the trash there, right?
Yeah. You think I'm saying something about my former newspaper? Is that what you're accusing me of? No, all props to the Baltimore Sun for letting us use the real paper in the show. I just love the idea that Lester Freeman's making the discovery through the chicken grease.
Mm-hmm.
Poor fucking kid.
That's that moment
mm-hmm.
where you're seeing the disparate
gone, that string
sense
the
of the investigation from their point of view. One of them feels the loss in a human sense, but for McNulty, it's just this screwed up the case.
He was in there changing his fucking clothes. You believe that? Boy had to get himself correct.
I think I love that line more than anything you've ever written. I know it's just a throwaway, but...
Well, it's D'Angelo. I mean, it is true to his character.
Yeah.
No need for an eyeball. Let the satellite do the work.
But, you know, my 9-year-old goes up to his bedroom to change his T-shirt, comes back down, I say, boy had to get himself correct, just to be able to use the line nowadays.
My lawyer.
Very proud of ourselves. This is what's known as the highway that goes nowhere, a small stretch of I-170 in West Baltimore that we can make look like an interstate anywhere on the planet if we have to. So it's playing for New Jersey here. It has played in so many episodes of Homicide. It's played on The Corner, I believe.
Keep your hands where I can see them. Turn around, face the car. Put your hands on the roof.
All-purpose interstate.
Weapons, sir?
No.
Any knives, any needles?
No.
Any legal substances I should know about?
Okay.
Bring your legs back. Spread your legs back more. Okay, slowly bring your right arm around your back. Now bring the other one.
This is the interrogation scene here. Again, we're asking the audience to reference a small moment from an earlier episode in the season. At the tail end of this, D'Angelo says something like, what you want me to do, write a letter to his mother, some shit like that. And that goes back to what was that earlier in the...
Right, the first time they had him in the box.
Right.
And in his relative inexperience, in the fact that he was disturbed that they had killed the witness who had testified against him after his trial, so it was only for retribution, it wasn't to get him off, he'd already gotten off. So he was disturbed by that to begin with, and McNulty has him in the box early on, and they actually get him to write a letter to some non-existent kids of the victim. He ran a game on them, and he's basically apologizing for the tragedy, even though he's not admitting guilt. Listen. But it's suggesting some foreknowledge or some awareness of the connection to his own trial. To nobody. And that's interrupted by the arrival of his lawyer.
Oh, by the way, your boy Wallace shot dead in the low-rises. That's how you'll take care of your own,
right? What you get is sort of the learning curve of human experience. You know, over 12 hours, somebody comes into an experience one way.
Let me write a letter to
and you see them absorb that experience, and then you get to write their next bite of the apple. And so there's a continuum. That's the wonderful thing about the 13 hours.
You might have to send him the way you did.
Another actor that didn't have a great deal of work. But we need replacing somebody in the universe that we could lean on when the plot went in that direction. Michael Hyatt,
look at Brianna.
Playing Brianna Barksdale.
You send my son.
And the beautiful thing is, she's in the game. I mean, you can tell by the way she's talking.
And then you just let him ride with that package.
She's dressing down her kid brother too. I like how he's kind of like retreating into the landscape there. He just wants to sink right into that couch.
D'Angelo gonna have to do his part.
Meaning what?
You like the car you're driving in, right?
One of the things about populating the universe as completely as we have with good actors is that you can basically create a plot that is what you want to say. You're not serving the characters with your plot. Mm-hmm. You're serving the story with the characters. A lot of episodic television, the people who are the stars, the people who are supposed to carry the show, the people who are supposed to get the attention, they make the arts. And before then, Harlem Park Middle. And he grew up blocks away from where we shot a lot of this film in West Baltimore.
D'Angelo, shut your mouth.
Where's Wallace? That's all I want to know.
Kid, you better think.
Where the fuck is Wallace? Huh? Strange.
An extraordinary actor.
Strange.
Who
look at me.
Just lived and breathed this part.
Where
he's
the fuck
great
is Wallace?
Scene.
Yeah.
Huh?
And just
I want this
keeps hammering.
Way, motherfucker representing me. I'm gonna get my own man. All right. So just get back in your car and get the fuck back down south.
All right, you stupid motherfucker. You made the decision.
Yeah, I made my decision. Where's Wallace at? Where the fuck is Wallace? Where's Wallace, Strange?
He took that one line at the end and just ran
Wallace?
With it.
It wasn't in the script.
No, it was the time to explode, though, and he sensed it. That was the actor's instincts taking over.
Charge whatever we wanted. Why not stay up on the bug we've got in his office?
The bug you didn't brief me about.
Well, I thought your little bird told you everything we did a minute after we did it. One of our people got hurt. That's supposed to mean something.
We are hunting our shooters. And by the grace of God and your good work, we've got a viable case on our main target. Just charge Barksdale with the temp purchase from New York and bring it all home.
And what about Stringer, his number two? He slipped off the hook when we lost the boy witness.
We've done all we can.
Are you hearing me? These are the people responsible for dropping a police. Not just the shooters, but the ones who make the dirt happen. I'm trying to put them down for real, not for some short time bit.
That all you're trying to do? See, if that's all you're trying to do, how is it you have people pulling campaign records and finance reports? The fuck has that got to do with anything?
The money is part of my case. Now, there might have been a time when I was willing to say otherwise to let you and all your friends hide some of the dirt, but not now.
You want to talk about dirt? Have at it. Talk some shit about your Eastern District days. Talk some shit about what was going on back when you
again,
was
running wild in the DEU. Again, these were all buried pieces of information. The last time you heard about Daniels having a history where he may not have always been clean was episode 3.
FBI field reports. You came into a lot of money quick. You can go to jail.
That's what we do
quick
on this show that annoys the hell out of casual viewers, and we don't do it to piss them off, but a book would not think twice about doing such a thing.
Lock up Barksdale. I'll have your major debrief your detectives.
If the material's in there in Chapter 3, you assume it was read and absorbed. And if it comes up again in Chapter 11, you know, a reader who's committed to reading that work is going to be able to access it. Why not on TV? It's entirely possible as long as you sort of get your audience to commit on a different level.
A lot of stories. Mine ain't the only one. A lot of people came through that district. If you were going to do me, I'd already be done. But there ain't nothing you fear more than a bad headline, is there? You'd rather live in shit than let the world see you work a shovel.
That line right there, that was you. You
can order warrants.
And that's a very memorable line.
But as long as I have days left on...
You have to work at an office where you were living in shit a little while to think of that line. I credit the Baltimore Sun there, I have to say. God bless them.
Look at these Delta Force motherfuckers, man. I mean, look at them.
All right.
What's up with Levy?
He said he gonna meet us down there.
Damn, I still ain't get this safe out of here yet, man. How much money in it?
150.
Again, now you're playing with the convention here.
Well, open it up, man.
What you would expect is them to storm this place and bullets and...
Right, the big arrest of the two main targets. We had to look at this as the big arrest scene. It was half empty, the glass being half empty. And we had to look at it as The Wire, not as a TV show where we were going to pay it off in the same way.
Oh, fuck this shit. You and me, Lieutenant.
What units are in the alley? Any sight line to the rear door? 10-4, who has the roof? We're gonna move in on my command. Everyone stand by.
We're not gonna need your men today. Call them back.
Now just wait a minute.
My case, back your men off.
That was actually a real police officer, Darren Fuentes of the Western District. Our actors pushed him aside brilliantly, I thought. This is the first time that our lead actor, Dominic West, on the cop side, and our lead actor, Wood Harris, on the drug side, actually had a scene together. They had not encountered each other in a scene until this penultimate episode in the first season, which is sort of the reality of hunting a guy through a wiretap. There's no big confrontations. You don't stand in an alley and point your finger in his chest and say, I'm going to get you.
Catch you later.
This mirrors visually the scene with Wallace. the reverse, actually, with McNulty standing at the top of the stairs.
Right, and being told he has to come down, leaving Stringer behind. Right down to the nod. As much as Bob got it right for us, I gotta say that that was in the script as it was. That was envisioned. Love the grease stains.
Mm-hmm.
Barksdale's wearing bracelets.
Still no Weebay? No little man?
No, nothing there.
They just made the connection as to why these guys were buying property and what the connection might be to the politicians and the payoffs. And they did it without dialogue.
It's the best work I ever did. I never did a case like this.
Any other television show would have been compelled to use dialogue. We said, hey, if you get it, you get it. If you're not, sorry.
Just feel like this just
we're kind of merciless
finished.
That way.
Detective.
Corey Parker Robinson as Sidner.
Yeah, that's a nice moan he's got there. I love this. This wasn't in the script either, the original script that I wrote. But it says everything about the season, doesn't it?
Yeah, about the loss of Wallace. And you just feel empty, and you feel as if the arrest was in no way worth it, which is exactly where we wanted it to be at this penultimate episode. Thank you for purchasing season one DVDs. I hope you purchased them. I hope they weren't shoplifted or downloaded. George, how many gross points do you have on the DVDs?
How many do you have?
I have none, George. You didn't get any either? You know what? Choplift these. You know, take as many as you
download
can from
them.
The store. Download them. Get rid of them. No, thank you very much.